This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. One in five students in a classroom in the U.S. are living with a mental health condition, but less than half receive the services and support that they need to succeed. That's according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So frequently, it's up to teachers and school staff to deal with students who need that extra care and attention, who are living with the effects of trauma. Teachers, coaches, district employees, even the bus driver can be trained to recognize signs of emotional distress and provide an avenue to address a child's special circumstances and try and turn a classroom into a trauma-sensitive space to help these kids get over some of these, learn how to help them progress in life without magnifying the impact of trauma. We're talking about that this afternoon. We invite you into the conversation, trauma-sensitive classrooms, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're joined by Lauren Garrity. She's the Director of Strategic Impact Initiatives for Communities and Schools in San Antonio. John Hernandez, Director of Student Services for East Central ISD. And Marisa De La Rosa is a Project Coordinator for the Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here this afternoon. So we're going to be talking about the word trauma a lot. And so let's talk about how trauma impacts a child. There's this study that people always refer to, this adverse childhood experience study, impact how trauma, and this is a massive study, 17,000 kids were involved in it. It is highly detailed. It really, really dedicated a lot of resources to figure out what does it mean to a child to impact some sort of trauma. So Lauren Garrity with Communities and Schools, can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So based on the research from the adverse childhood experiences study that was done by the CDC and Kaiser Permanente, we now know that regardless of socioeconomic background, 2/3 of all children have experienced at least one episode of extreme stress or an adverse childhood experience, as they're called in the study. So these ACEs, as they're termed, have direct and long-lasting effects on our children's ability to be successful in school. And so some of the stats behind that is, for example, kids who have had two or more episodes of extreme stress are 2.6 times more likely to fail a grade, 2 times more likely to be suspended, 5 times more likely to have attendance problems, 6 times more likely to have behavioral problems. And obviously, these problems are only compounded the more episodes a student has. So a kid who has 4 or more ACEs is 32 times as likely to have learning and behavior issues in school.
We know that these trauma, let's talk about, what are we talking about when we say trauma? Marisa De La Rosa at the Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative, what do we mean by trauma here?
Here, when we're talking about trauma, we're really talking about, you know, experts explain it as the response to event. Sometimes people think about a traumatic event and they think about the event itself. But really, we're talking about the response, the individual response that a person may experience that may trigger just a cascade of different kinds of effects and that then can cause complications in the school setting.
So if a child is living in a household where a lot of volatility, you know, and unpredictable parental behavior, that can cause the trauma?
So that's the event. And, you know, it's interesting. There could be children growing up in the same household that then may respond to that event in different ways. And that just depends on a number of different factors in terms of that child's resiliency. But what then may translate into schools are issues with learning, with the ability to self-regulate their emotions and behaviors, and then also in their ability to relate to and maintain and establish positive, productive relationships with peers and with the adults who are working with them at school.
And Marisa Del Rosario, it's a actual physical change happens in the brain?
That's right. There are many impacts in the brain, and the science is getting clearer and clearer about this. There are impacts in, you know, if we think about what we ask students to do at school in terms of academics, it's often thinking about the ability to synthesize information, to recall information, to organize information, and to have the language skills to then sort of spit that back out at the adults who are working with them. But trauma impacts areas of the brain. And this can show up in the classroom. And additionally, it impacts the areas of the brain around self-regulation and the abilities for children to regulate their emotions and behaviors. And again, this shows up in the classroom. If we're asking students to sit quietly or to sort of be attentive in the classroom, there are some impacts there that we really want educators to understand so that they can better meet the needs of the students before them.
John Hernandez, Director of Student Services for East Central ISD. Trauma-informed classrooms and staff, instructors, is that something that y'all are talking about?
Yes, we are definitely visiting with understanding as to reasons why, basically, what's the barrier preventing kids from coming to school as to how our practice got initiated. But at the same time, going off the previous question, is that it definitely affects students differently. So, for example, a loss of a parent, you may have a middle school student that has more resiliency and can overcome quicker, and you may have a sibling in third grade that's really struggling with that. So it's basically getting to the root cause. Even though they're in the same household, they might have different needs at different levels. And that's the biggest piece that we've been able to identify, is that a divorce, for example, is another example that we, some kids might need a lot of support, some may not need. Don't bother me with that situation, I'm going to overcome this. So it's always the day-to-day instruction that you want to build the resiliency and the grit to overcome, but at the same time, know that we're here, we care about you. We're going to connect you to the appropriate resource, because it definitely impacts each and every one of us in different ways. And so the bottom line is, if we're trying to connect them with the significant adult that can be their mentor, because when they have a significant adult in their life, then their chances are, probability increases on getting to graduation without getting in trouble, attendance, behavior, you know, those kind of things. We want to be proactive on those measures, but it was important for us, you know, in our system to, when we say training our staff, is all meant all, and that included our custodial staff, our nutrition staff, our child nutrition staff, and so everyone in our system been trained on the awareness piece of trauma and how it affects. But at the same time, you see something, say something, and we have protocols on how to get that information to the child.
Right, so it seems like over at East Central ISD, John, y'all have a lot going on. Not only are you supposed to teach these kids, but also there's a lot of concern now about school campus safety?
Yes, sir.
And so,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying it all fits together.
It totally fits together. We initiated this. This is our third year. We just completed our second birthday this summer. But we saw pretty quickly, and again, all you see, it's not black or white. When you look at attendance, for example, this is how we initiated EC Cares, is that you saw real quick a kid, these amount of students are missing 10 or more unexcused absences. Okay.
Right.
Previously, before House Bill 2398, it was, well, send them all to court. Well, that didn't work, right? So
right.
My first year at this chair.
Hey, John, I got to hit this break, John, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue talking about student trauma, mental health programs in the classroom, how to reduce discipline, improve test scores through trauma-informed staff. 210-614-8980. We continue. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We know that a child that has dealt with severe trauma early in childhood, they're experiencing setbacks when it comes to development of the brain, that they have a dissociative complex. They can be numb. They can be withdrawn. They can be quick to anger. It's harder for them to tease out the fact that when they get a paper back in a classroom, it's marked up with a lot of red marks. They take it personally. And you're not grading them, you're grading the paper, but it's harder for them to figure that out. We know that when we apply a trauma-informed classroom techniques that we have fewer need for discipline and better test results. Well, why is that? And how can we support and try to get these techniques into all classrooms and so that we can help all kids? Number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And this also, as we heard earlier, carries over into the safety of our classrooms. You know, when we're able to engage children on that basis in the classroom, we're better able to sniff out when there is something severe amiss and whether we can get them the help that they need. 210-614-8980. If you got a question or a comment, Lauren Garrity is the Director of Strategic Impact Initiatives for Communities and Schools in San Antonio. So, Lauren, can you talk about what Communities and Schools is doing here in San Antonio with the school districts and what you bring to the table?
Absolutely. So, excuse me, as I mentioned earlier, Communities and Schools is integrated student supports, but really we believe in the power of relationships at Communities and Schools. It's people, not programs, that'll make the difference in a child's life. And according to the National Scientific Council on the Developing Child, the single most common finding is that children who end up doing well have had at least one stable and committed relationship with a supportive parent or caregiver or adult, period, right? So in many schools, Communities and Schools, social workers and counselors are that one supportive adult relationship that students have. And so we've been doing that for a number of years. Historically, we case manage students and provide them those basic needs. They need the mental health support and access that they need in order to address some of those barriers to being academically successful. What we're doing different now is we're going to continue our focus on our youth, but we're also expanding our focus to serve and support and build capacity with other adults, in the community who also work with youth and focus on youth development. So in the world where teachers in their teacher certification programs or teacher prep programs were not exposed to anything regarding the behavior of students, behavior management, the history and complexities that trauma can present for students in the classroom trying to focus, we're hoping by a new training system that we're putting out called the School Box of Trainings to offer trauma-informed trainings, mindfulness trainings, restorative trainings to campus staff, not just teachers, but all campus personnel, other youth development organizations like out-of-school time partners, so that everybody has a common language and a common understanding of how to support these youths to be their best selves. It's one thing to work with a student in the Communities and Schools classroom, but if the rest of their ecosystem is providing counterintuitive methods or contrary methods or frameworks with way to support students, it's not very helpful. So that's one thing that we're doing. We're also working with our partners in Northeast ISD and Northside ISD to pilot some really incredible programs. In Northside, we're going to be piloting what we're calling Project Heart and Minds. So we're going to be helping provide capacity for a few campuses to become trauma-sensitive schools, trauma-informed schools. And then with Northeast ISD, we're doing the Base Wellness Project at Lee High School, where, again, we're providing a physical coach to help the adults work through some of the socio-emotional issues that they might find in their classrooms with students. And then we're working with Clarity Child Guidance Center and their 1 in 5 Minds toolbox for the educators so that you have both a digital and a physical presence to help you understand how to support students to be their best selves. And the H.E. Butt Foundation is helping support that project.
So Communities and Schools in San Antonio is providing training for the teachers, instructors, and staff in these local school districts so that they are better attuned at identifying kids and being able to communicate with them and reach out with them, interact with them in a way that doesn't just continue to isolate them, put them off, turn them off, but instead bring them along and nurture them.
It's all about the relationship, exactly.
So Marisa Del Rosario at the Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative, can you talk to me about the difference between a classroom that has that training and an instructor that has that training and one that does not? I mean, does it make a big difference?
Absolutely, it makes a big difference. You know, the nature of trauma is that it can really cause feelings of disconnection and isolation from the school community. You know, people sort of walk around with this feeling of not walking through the world in the same way that other people do. And that can be very isolating. And that can really undermine student success. But what we know is that students spend time at school, and if we can create strong community at school and a goodness of fit between the student and their school experience in the classroom, inside of the building, in the after-school activities, and we can build this strong sense of community that sort of mitigates the effects of trauma in that way. Connected and supported. No, I was just going
to
add that.
Yeah, so as we know that there's a connectivity between being able to learn and being able to feel safe and secure in a space.
That's right.
But when we have policies, procedures, drills regarding school shootings, does that put that safe space in jeopardy, Marisa?
You know, I think we are obviously living in a world right now where school violence is on all of our minds. Our students know that, our families know that, our communities feel that. Even there in Texas, you've experienced that firsthand. So the idea, you know, in trying to figure out, I think it's about figuring out what helps students feel safe. And is there, you know, our schools are moving towards things like active shooter drills and the ability to sort of prepare in that way, which may be a component of helping students feel safe. But I think it, you know, what Lauren so eloquently talked about is that relationship and making sure that we're in tune with the students and noticing how they're reacting to that. Building up systems that help them feel safe, but keeping an eye to make sure that that's for all students. Some students may handle that just fine. Other students, it may trigger something in them, and they may need a little more support with that. So it's a system that can be adaptable and flexible enough to meet the needs of all students.
But the reality that we have is that these school shootings do happen. We're going to have, we're talking about arming teachers. That's a thing. Also, these drills, that's another thing. And kids are looking around at each other, and they're wondering, which one of this kid in this classroom is most likely to shoot me? I mean, this is something that the kids talk about among themselves. How do we roll out these, you know, procedures that we're trying to increase our safety? And it's going to happen. We need to do that in a way that also keeps in mind not to increase the trauma that's already being inflicted on these children. Are we doing these things simultaneously? We got to roll out, we got to make our classroom safer, school safer. How do we do that in a way that keeps in mind trauma? So John Hernandez, you're doing this. You're at East Central ISD. How do you do both these things simultaneously?
Well, one thing is that you definitely have to, the end user, basically the student, you got to utilize them as well, because there's research out there that shows that, for example, cyberbullying, you'll see that 41% of students have observed another student bullied on cyber, but they haven't communicated, right? So the research is there to where we have to equip those students to see something, say something, to where they know, they feel safe, that there's not going to be retaliation, because when you look at data, it'll show that a lot of these, unfortunately, the trends have shown that it was not one single event that occurred for an active shooter. It was a compound of several events. The kid may have had a red flag in fourth grade, a red flag in sixth grade, seventh grade. So what we're trying to do is, when that first, the young man or anyone comes to our office, we got to make sure we get the supports in place in our initial contact as to where there isn't a second offense or a second situation. But we're definitely utilizing, you know, apps, utilizing community to report any form of unsafe environment. It was publicized at our football game on Friday night. So you got to use the entire community, not just the school, just back to relationships to where they trust you. That, hey, I know if I report something to him, something's going to happen. They'll bring someone in for investigation or whatever the case might be. But ultimately, it's ensuring that everyone's safe, not just students, but staff in our district, because we got to work together to report those things. We do know social media is a huge, huge part with that. And so the key is to be as proactive as possible with those reports.
Lauren Guarantee, you're working with schools, with communities and schools in San Antonio. How have things changed in this regard, safety on campus?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that communities and schools focuses on more of the mental health supports, the preventative pieces, the early identification pieces, than we do the hardening of our schools, to say. We have been invited into conversations to talk about, you know, what does a better security system look like, or what does it look like to have more school resource officers. But at the end of the day, communities and schools is fully supportive of a lot of the legislative recommendations that have been made regarding just building a better presence of mental health personnel on campuses. Research shows that the hardening of the schools isn't nearly as effective at preventing and deterring unfortunate tragedies and incidents.
So when you say hardening of the schools, that means the metal detectors, the locks on the doors,
right,
all those other items.
Exactly. And so the research shows that if you, much as John was saying, if you just know your students, right, it's that relationship piece, and the more strong relationships that student has, the greater the likelihood that they'll be not just more social and academically successful and emotionally successful, but it also decreases their likelihood of engaging in high-risk activities. And so it's about that personalized understanding of each student, their background, their history. It's not, why are you acting like this or what's wrong with you? It's what happened to you.
Yeah, you see that it's an expression people throw at children all the time when they are acting out, you know, and you say, what's wrong with you? And that is like the worst thing you could tell a child, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And of course they're going to, and they internalize that. It's not just this random words. And so Lauren, tell me more about why. Why is this, you know, don't say that, okay? Wipe that out of your vocabulary.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I mean, you make an assumption that there's something wrong with the child just with that word, right? And it stigmatizes the child. But at the end of the day, it's important to take a different approach because, like the research says, at least 2/3 of all adults, right, in the United States of America that were part of this 17,000-person survey, and there have been many ACE surveys since then, and they're all showing around that percentage, right? 66% of the population have at least one adverse childhood experience. So we all have had things happen to us. And so when you take an approach like, what happened to you? What happened to you, not just to focus on maybe if you're having a behavioral issue in the classroom, but what happened that you're so reserved, that you're so quiet? What happened that you're the opposite of that, that you're an extrovert? What happened to you informs so many things regarding a student's performance or a student's engagement. And so when you look at that lens, it's not, you don't have to do an assessment with a student to find out if they had an ACE. When you assume that students may come with complex backgrounds or may come from complex households, then you're treating all students equally and you're ensuring an equitable advantage as a teacher to make sure that all students have access to the right opportunities that they need.
Right, and Marisa, these children, they're going back home at the end of the day to the classroom, back into the environment that inflicts that trauma.
That's right. There are many students who are, you know, living in situations or in communities where there's ongoing violence that they're experiencing over and over again. I think just to piggyback on what Lauren was describing, you know, it reminds me of a couple of sort of mindset shifts that have to take place in order to create trauma-sensitive environments. So that question, as she phrased it, is one of them. You know, it's really shifting the mindset from seeing the child as a problem to really being curious, to approaching the situation with a spirit of curiosity. You know, what happened and how can I support you? Making, you know, rather than assuming a child doesn't care or a family is disengaged, you know, asking the questions, what might be going on? And maybe starting with the assumption that perhaps they're doing the very best they can given the circumstances and they may need some more support. I think that oftentimes in schools, there are just a number of misunderstandings that take place between the adults working so hard to support students and the students themselves. And bridging that misunderstanding is what can really create these successful environments for students.
Parents, do you think your kids would be safer at schools if educators were trained to recognize trauma and emotional distress in students? If your child was dealing with emotional distress, would you want them to get extra help at school? How do we make our schools, our classrooms, better informed to deal with trauma in order to make our kids successful and safe? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about a topic that can make your children smarter, safer, and more successful in the classroom, that's having classroom teachers who are trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive, able to recognize students that need a little bit of extra care. What can they provide for them in order to help them, you know, deal with some of the issues that they've had in life? You know, not everyone has dealt a strong hand. So what are we going to do? How do we build resilience with these children? And how can we help all of them? Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. John Hernandez, Director of Student Services for East Central ISD, often the issue of privacy comes up. People aren't crazy about teachers asking sensitive questions about what's going on at home. How do we help these kids while also respecting their privacy?
The key is to let the teachers know that when a situation arises, because the more you can get trained on the awareness piece, because there'll be a student come in today and report something to their coach or some of their cheerleader sponsor, and how do we ensure that that information is going to get to our counselors? That's the biggest piece, because ultimately we want to let the student know that we're here to help you. We want to it's kind of like a cry for help. An outcry, and we definitely want everyone to know that we're in the same team together. But at the same time, is getting that counselor to send a brief email to the teachers, and nothing significant, of course, but just enough to say, listen, the student is going through something, but just keep in mind that they've been identified EC Cares, and that's all they need to know without breaching any form of confidentiality. And so it allows others to know in the group, because previously only the bus driver had that information, or only one teacher did. And so we had to create protocols on we can't do it all ourselves, right? So we need an entire village, basically, to assist us in recognizing and identifying these signs. And so the more powerful a teacher is, because they all want to help. And then it's to what extent, because they don't know the information. But I assure you that if they did know some of the circumstance, they're going to roll their sleeves up and, you know, I want to do more. We've been able to train staff to where now they're coming forward with, we're identifying now at a record level. And I'm just going by in the last 2 years how we were identifying slowly, but now that we've gotten a lot more staff trained or awareness piece, is that bus drivers, nutrition, coaches, they're all going to their counselors and increasing. And that's actually one of our student goals through our organization, through student services, that we are going to guarantee, basically, when a parent calls and say, look, my son's going through something, is that we're going to get him the support that he needs. And that's something that we want to basically institutionalize across our entire district with all our counselors and staff, that if a student does have a situation, that we're going to get them what they need without, again, violating any FERPA. But again, right, we'll communicate with all those to assist. And if we have to resource out, and then we do so because we ultimately want to help the child.
All right, let's go to the callers. And Will is on the line. Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. It sounds like Germany, 1938. Our teachers need to concentrate on educating these children. I'm well over 50 years old, and I run across these graduates that can't balance a checkbook. They can't make change. They can't read or comprehend what they're reading. I think we spend too much time. I mean, I understand that children have issues, but that's their parents' issue to deal with. And if they need professional help, the parents will find that professional help. But our schools need to focus on teaching these children, not get muddied in the water of social building.
Okay, Will, thank you for the call. Anyone that starts off a comment with sounds like Germany, 1938, hard to take them serious. But his issue of, you know, this is on the parents, Lauren Agarity from Communities and Schools. What do you think?
I think you make an assumption about how much time parents have, especially parents who are working multiple jobs, because one job, two jobs, three jobs isn't keeping the lights on and the roof over their heads. And so there's a difference between parents who have access to transportation and parents who don't have access to transportation. There's difference between parents who have cultural taboos around some of the mental health issues and others that don't. So I think you make a lot of assumptions that maybe this caller's parents were super present and available and had time and had financial resources and the emotional stability to help their students connect, or their children connect to what they need. But that's why organizations like ours exist. We stand in the gap for those children who don't have somebody who has the time, treasure, transportation to get them what they need when they need it.
And Marisa Del Rosario at Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative, how do we provide help for kids without being intrusive into their families?
Such a great question. You know, some of the practices that have already been discussed, I think, are the best way. We're really talking about a whole school approach where the individual services and supports are well integrated into the school, where the staff in the school shares an understanding, a deep understanding about both the prevalence of trauma and the impacts of trauma, so that they can then operate in their own role to best support the students. The truth is, we don't, you know, we may think we know which students in our school have experienced traumatic events. And we may know, in fact, you know, if a student discloses that to us, or the family lets us know, or we read it in the community newspaper. But the truth is, we will never know all of the students who have experienced traumatic events. And so that ability to employ best practices as a whole, across the board, as a universal design for the school, is really the way that we protect the confidentiality and make sure that all students feel safe, welcomed, and supported in their school. And all means all, as John said earlier.
But also, this is about classroom outcomes. Better grades, better test scores, fewer need for discipline interventions. And the better trained teachers are in how to speak to different students about how they present themselves and how they deal with the stress in their lives, how can that be anything but good? John Hernandez at East Central.
It goes back to relationships, train staff ongoing throughout the year, not just once at the beginning of the year, because, you know, when you're training social emotional learning, it's ongoing data. And at the same time, it's ongoing change. So what works for one may not work for another. And the other thing, for example, you got to give them the information up front. So with our staff, for example, is if there is an upset about, hey, well, the parents aren't involved, you know, they're not coming to a parent meeting. But when you give them the data that shows, hey, listen, we have this percentage of grandparents raising grandchildren in our campus. So, yes, we want to be upset about the parents aren't involved, but dad's in prison. And mom is, you know, passed away. That kid got dealt a deck of cards that it's out of his control. So we focus on what kids can control, right? And then we give them the resiliency to, you know, you're going to overcome. I'm sorry you're going through what you're going through, but we're gonna prepare you by overcoming adversity, not giving up, you know, those kind of things, and then the practice habits and for an ongoing learning for the rest of their life. But there is a raise in grandparents raising grandchildren. So then the shift becomes also, how do we equip our grandparents with the skills to help them raise their grandchildren? Because they are raising their grandchildren the same way they raised their own children 20 years ago. And it's a whole different situation now. So we're bringing in, for example, we're getting our grandparents training on how to go over a smartphone, for example. That's a new set of training, because some of the upset when you talk to some of the grandparents is like, I don't know what my grandkids on. So we're navigating through some of those new trainings that didn't happen 5-7 years ago. And so, but it's ongoing changing on knowing trends and knowing what's coming your way. Basically,
right.
We want to be proactive, but we're gonna partner with our grandparents and as a partnership, because they're the stakeholder in that household, and we got to equip them with the skills to help them with their grandchild,
right?
Because they ultimately want the grandchild to get to school, the college, or whatever continuing education opportunity,
right,
after graduation.
Here's Jill. Jill's called in, and Jill, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to state my support for Coming from the perspective of what happened to you, and rather than, you know, what's wrong with you, or directly giving negative attention, i.e. Corporal punishment, you know, and some of these other things, when a child is acting differently, or getting to know a child when they've transferred in during the school year, and they're, you know, and having a more community welcoming, like you said, giving a safe place so that child is part of a new family in the school, where that may be the only safe place that they have when home is a war zone or whatnot. Speaking from personal experience, you know, in the private sector, in the schools, you know, in Texas over my whole life, huge difference it would have made for me and some of my classmates. And then as an educator, a lot of my students, if we had had that type of training.
All right, Jill, thank you so much. You never know what's going on in someone's household. It can be in any neighborhood, any economic class that we have. Once they go in through that door into the house, we don't know what kind of war zone they have walked into, if it's going to be a nurturing environment or if it's going to be a minefield. We don't know. But the parents, but the teachers, they have to deal with that, and they have a sense of what's happening, but they can ask questions, but they can provide emotional support in many, many ways. And the more training that we're able to provide for the teachers, the better that they're able to do that. So how do we do that? How do we support the teachers? How do we get them the training? How do we value this as a community in order to give them the wraparound services so these children are able to get a better start in life? Give us a call with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. I want to give thanks to John Hernandez. We got to let you go. I know you're short on time. He is the Director of Student Services for East Central ISD. Appreciate your insight. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more calls from more questions. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Positive reinforcement, positive redirection, those are some things that teachers can do once they've been trained how to do it in dealing with a child who may have some behavioral issues in a classroom. As part of having a trauma-informed classroom, being able to help children deal with the stress in their lives in a positive way so they need fewer discipline interventions and get a better test scores as well. How does this work? How can we spread the word? How can we wrap around this as a community to have better outcomes in our classrooms with a trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive teachers and staff all through the schools? Not just hardening our schools, turning them into fortresses because we're all worried about shooters. Let's help our children so they never even think about becoming shooters. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We welcome your calls, and Adriana is on the line. Adriana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. I was just thinking if we could possibly, like, incorporate into the curriculum a yearly assignment where kids were able to express maybe a traumatic situation or something that they're going through, and, you know, this would, like, throughout the summer they could think about it, something that they already knew was going to be part of their curriculum. And then they could, the teachers could actually know. I mean, some kids might not have anything that dramatic to report, but maybe another child has something that they really want to talk about, and this would be a little bit easier or a common way for them to communicate instead of just singling anybody out. It's just a thought.
Well, it's very nice to call in with that, Adriana. Let me go to Marisa Del Rosario. I'm sorry, I keep getting that name.
It's okay.
So Project Coordinator for Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative. Adriana's suggestions?
Yeah, I think, from our perspective, one of the cautions around doing something like that would be that we wouldn't want to engage in practices that would further stigmatize students. You know, again, the nature of trauma is that often students feel very disconnected, maybe alienated. And so that ability for them, for a student or a family, to really determine who on that school campus holds that information, they decide who they trust, if they want to share that information, and those kind of things, I think is very important. And it's why we really advocate for a whole school trauma-sensitive approach, so that you're employing teachers, administrators, everyone in the building, they're employing these best practices around supporting students across the building. And those individual supports can be in place, and they can be well integrated into the school, but students can then sort of have the ability to maintain their privacy. I mean, if we think about our own lives, you know, we don't necessarily want to walk around sort of sharing the deepest, hardest things that have happened to us with everyone. We're very selective in who we might share that information with. And our students have a right to that privacy as well. So I think it's about creating a system that can support all students with the knowledge that these experiences, you know, have happened in some students' lives.
Students also exhibit that they are troubled in different ways. Some of them are really locked down. They don't want to expose a whole lot about their lives in the classroom. And you can almost see them as they want to be invisible in the classroom. Yeah. And you have to engage with them in a way. So, Lauren Garrity, can you talk about that child?
Yeah. So I think it's really important, again, going back to relationships, if you notice a distinct change in a student, right, that's something really important. If a student had been really outgoing but all of a sudden was very reserved, that's one situation. If you just have a student who's very reserved and doesn't want to engage, I think that's when you really leverage your relationship and you ensure that you've asked certain questions to get to the heart of a student, right? So if it's asking a question of all of your students at the beginning of the school year, like, what's something you wish your teacher knew about you? Something as simple as that. And it could be a student saying, my favorite movie is Spaceballs, or it could be a student saying, I go home and I don't think there's food there, right? So there's a number of ways for you to develop that relationship with a student, regardless of how external facing or internal facing they are.
Okay, back to the callers. And this is Stacy. Stacy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. One of your guests was just talking about having a system of support. And as someone who was a school counselor for over a decade, I think one of the biggest issues is how we value as a state the role of the school counselor, how administrators on campuses, how people in district personnel see and value the role of the school counselor. I think teachers actually do a really good job of reaching out to students and making the referrals to the counselors. The problem is when counselors have caseloads of 500 plus students, they're not accessible in the way that we are trained to be. We're not utilized as mental health professionals in the way that we could be on campuses. And I feel like until that changes, we're going to continue to see problems.
I understand that on average nationwide, there is one school counselor for every 500 students and one school psychologist for every 1,400 students. Let's go to Earl. He's on the line. Earl, welcome to The Source. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm still kind of boggling on the Germany 1939 comment because we all know how well conscripted labor worked out. One of the things that I've noticed in the student population that I deal with is when they realize how badly they were treated in public schools, when they start to realize the opportunities that should have been there, it's interesting to see these kids blossom. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Earl, thank you for your call. Lauren Garrity, you know, these wounds don't heal if you don't address them.
Yeah, you can bury it and bury it and bury it, but you really do need to provide the opportunities for students or campus staff, right? Like, we have to model this as adults. We have to model high-quality mental wellness. And so to the first caller's point, yes, we have a bottleneck. And the more we make staff aware of and able to identify students who have potential mental health issues or trauma in their past, we need to make sure then that those staff are supported and have an appropriate number of opportunities and places and other individuals to refer those students to. Because again, we don't want the teachers to be mental health professionals. We want them to be able to do the early identification. We want them to be able to do the prevention piece.
And so, Marisa Del Rosario, how soon does this start going into the classrooms? Are we talking about kindergarten, pre-K, elementary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, that again, all schools have the population of children in front of them that have these needs. And so, you know, as Lauren just pointed out, yes, early identification prevention, but also educating. You know, the ability for a student to be successful at school is another thing that really mitigates the effects of trauma. To experience that level of competence as a student, when you're sitting in the classroom and all day long, you know, you're just having the same experience of either not being able to manage and regulate your emotion and behavior, and so therefore you're being asked to leave the classroom, or you're, you know, sort of the relationship between the teacher and student is being affected in a negative way, or, you know, there's the impact that we talked about earlier with things like the ability to organize information or your language, and so you're struggling academically. You know, again, you begin to feel like, this isn't a place for me. School is not, I'm not successful here. This is not a place for me. And we really want students from the time they enter the building until the time they successfully leave as graduates to feel like school is a place for them, that there are adults there who want to help mitigate these experiences, the effects of trauma, that they can learn new skills, new ways to behave, new ways to manage what might be going on, and practice them throughout the day with adults who, you know, are interested in maintaining a relationship with them and who want to see them succeed. And that can go a very long way for students to feel successful and to overcome some of these adverse experiences.
And Kelly called in. Hey, Kelly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I think that my thoughts on this kind of echo what one of the other callers, I believe her name was Stacy, was. Our counselors, I'm lucky enough to work for a school district and a particular campus with great administration and great counselors, but they are so overworked, and there's so much more that they would like to do for each of their kids that's part of their caseload. But when you just look at the magnitude of, first of all, the total number of students we have, and then you break that down into how many active cases each counselor has with various students, it's almost impossible. And I'm actually on my lunch break right now, and I can almost guarantee you that I won't see a single counselor getting a chance to come in here and get a bite to eat, because they are just all day long, go, go, go. And, you know, we're constantly asking more of them, and they oblige. But I think that we are underfunded and probably understaffed.
All right, Kelly, thank you for that. but we have organizations like Communities and Schools here in San Antonio. They are augmenting what's happening on our campuses in San Antonio, helping teachers and staff who haven't had that training to get more help and learning how to create a healthy environment for these children so they can learn all the social skills. Learning how to be in society is another role that we're supposed to get out of school. So Lauren, Guarantee, tell me a little bit more about how that works.
Yeah, so both callers are making excellent points about the current system, right, and the current capacity of the system to support youth with outstanding mental health needs. To that end, Communities and Schools is part of the upcoming Harvard Leadership Institute. Harvard, their education redesign lab is thinking through how do you do a better job integrating health and human services into schools, into all schools. And as an integrated student supports agency, Communities and Schools is happy to be at the table to share what we've learned or best practices. And to really start rethinking, how do we as a whole school, whole community, make sure that everybody knows how to support students to be their best selves?
All right. Lauren Guarantee is the Director of Strategic Impact Initiatives for Communities and Schools in San Antonio. Marisa Della Rosario is the Project Coordinator for the Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative. Earlier, we had John Hernandez. He's the Director of Student Services for East Central ISD. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks so much for tuning us in.